We now continue with lesson number 17 in our study of Mishnayos Maseches Yoma. In lesson 17, today, we will complete Perek Dalet and begin Perek He, finishing the sixth Mishnah of chapter 4 and beginning the first Mishnah of chapter 5. In the preceding Mishnayos, we had kind of left the action of the day for a moment, and we began to compare some and contrast some of the differences between the procedure in the Beis HaMikdash with the Ketores from day to day, every day to Yom Kippur. Now in Mishnah Vav we are learning some other differences between the daily routine and the routine on Yom Kippur. B'chol yom hayu shom arba ma'arochos. On every day, there were four piles of wood, four heaps of wood, firewood, from which fires were burning, upon the platform, the top of the Mizbeach. V'hayom, but today on Yom Kippur, chomesh, there were five, divrei Rab Meir. This is Rab Meir's opinion. Rameyer believes, and he does this based on the way he understands the psukim in Parshas Vayikra Vov, in Parshas Tzav, where the commands are given, where the mitzvos are given for the fire upon the mizbeach. And Rameyer understands that there are four ma'arochos, four heaps of wood. One is the ma'arocha gedola, where the sections of the animal, of the korban tomid, and the parts of the other korbanos were placed to be consumed upon the fire. That was one ma'arocha. A second ma'arocha was simply there so that the kohen, every day, when he wanted to get the coals upon which he was going to sprinkle the incense, he would get those coals from a second ma'arocha, ma'arocha shniyo. According to Rab Meir, there would also be a third ma'arocha, which was just l'kiyum ho'esh, just to have fire burning all the time. That's how he understood the pasuk, v'ho'esh al ha'mizbeach tukad bo lo sichpe. There had to be a constant, continuous fire. That's the third ma'arocha. And the fourth ma'arocha was, in case some of the evorim, some of the sections of the korban tamid of the end of the day, were not consumed overnight, they were placed upon this fourth fire. On Yom Kippur, there was a fifth ma'arocha, so that the Kohen Gadol would be able to get coals for the ketores, the coals which we already learned that he would shovel up in this machta, in this pan or shovel, from the fifth fire. That's how things were according to Rab Meir. Rab Yossi says, no, b'chol yom sholosh, there are only three every day of the year. There was a ma'arocha gedola, the ma'arocha shniyah, for the ketores of every day. There was the ma'arocha for kiyum ho'esh, to make sure the fire was only burning. But there was no fourth ma'arocha for the evorei tomid shel ben ho'abayim, for the sections of the korban tomid brought every afternoon, which were not consumed the following night, but rather they were placed upon the ma'arocha gedola. V'hayom, on Yom Kippur, arba. All year there were three. On Yom Kippur there was an additional fourth one. Again, that fourth one was for the purpose of the Kohen Gadol getting hot coals to put into the machta, raking up these hot coals to use for the ketores to be sprinkled upon so that the ketores would go up in smoke. This was Rab Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'chol yom shtayim b'hayom shalosh. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, all year long there are only two ma'arochos, the ma'arocha gedola, upon which the sections of the korban were placed, the ma'arocha shniya, which was used to get coals for the ketores all year long, and there was no need, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to have a kiyum ho'esh, to have a separate ma'arocha of fire burning. He understands the psukim differently. But Hayom Shalosh, and indeed he agrees, on Yom Kippur, there was a third ma'arocha. So they all agree that there was an additional ma'arocha, additional heap of firewood on top of the Mizbeach on Yom Kippur, from which the Kohen Gadol would shovel up into the Machta hot coals for use in the Ketores. So we have finished Perek Dalet. Now we're going back to the sequence. Remember, we left things in suspense. We had a Kohen, not the Kohen Gadol, stirring the Dam HaPor, and we had now on the floor of the Azora, by the Rovad Revi, by the fourth row, a shovel full of hot coals. Next step. The next step is as follows. Hotziu lo es hakaf vi es hamachta. They brought out, now for the Kohen Gadol standing there, so to speak, empty-handed, they brought out a large spoon or ladle, empty, and a machta. This second machta was not full of coals. This machta was full of ketores, finely ground ketores, daka min hadaka, very finely ground ketores, which they got from the family with whom we are already familiar of Beis Aftinas, who prepared the ketores. V'chofan melo chofnov, he took a handful, he would put his two hands like a V shape and scoop out from the machta a melochofnov, hands full of ketores. V'nosan l'toch hakaf, and he would place it from his hands into the kaf. The act of chafina, the act of scooping up, was done with his bare hands. And then it was dropped into the kaf, into the ladle. Hagadolafi gadlo, if you had a Kohen Gadol with large hands, he had a bigger Melochofnov. Hakoton, a small Kohen, small physically. Fi Kotno, he would have a smaller Melochofnov. That was the measure. There was no special measure that they checked out with the Bureau of Standards. But rather, the Melochofnov would vary in volume depending upon the size of the hands of the particular Kohen Gadol. Now, Notales HaMachto, he would take the Machto, the first machta, the shovel containing the coals, biamino, in his right hand, the eshakaf, and the ladle or spoon with the ketores, and put that bismolo in his left hand. You might wonder, the ketores is the object out of which the mitzvah is done. The coals in the machta, that's kind of just a hechsher mitzvah. That's not the ikur mitzvah. The ikur mitzvah is the incense, not the coals. So maybe you should put the kaf in his right hand and the macht on his left hand. This was done simply to make things easier for the Kohen Gadol. No question that the machta full of coals was much heavier than the spoonful of ketores. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol was right-handed. And therefore, if it was left-handed, he couldn't be the Kohen Gadol. So he was right-handed. He carried the heavier of the two in his right hand and in his left hand, the kaf of the ketores. Now, he would walk westward through the Heichal, and he would walk through the Heichal toward the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which is the most westerly section of the Beis HaMikdosh, ad shemegia levein shtei haporochos hamavdilos bein HaKodesh uvein Kodesh HaKodeshim. When you walk from east to west, you first go through the Heichal, in which there are basically three objects, the menorah and the shulchan with the lechem and the special mizbeach, the gold mizbeach for ketores of all year, not for Yom Kippur. And he would walk through that vestibule, through that heichal, toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but separating the heichal from the Kodesh Kadoshim in the Bayis Sheni, in the second temple, were two parochasin, two curtains separated by the distance of an amo. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a thick wall, amo thick there. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, whose dimensions were much larger, and the roof was much higher, it was impossible or very difficult to make a wall, an amo thick, that could be so tall. So instead, they had two curtains separated by an amo, uveinehem amo, and the Kohen Gadol would approach from east to west those two porochos. Rabbi Yossi Omer, lo hoiso shem elo poroches achas bilvad. Rabbi Yossi said there weren't two porochos, but just one. The dispute between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi is, Rabbi Yossi felt they knew exactly where that wall in the first Beis HaMikdash ended and began, and therefore they could put a poroches right on the spot. However, the Tanna Kamma says, no, they weren't sure if it was inward, outward, so therefore they put a paroches on the, which would basically be, have between the two parochos, the Amma, which was occupied by the Kosel, because they weren't sure whether that Kosel, the first place on Mikdash, was considered Kodesh or Kodesh Kodoshim. In any case, Rabbi Yossi says, the Pasuk says, V'hivdilo ha-poroches lochem bein ha-kodesh uvein kodesh ha-kodoshim. There was just one poroches separating the kodesh, the heichol, and the kodesh kodoshim, the holy of holies. Anyway, following the Tanna Kamma, the Mishnah continues. There were two parallel curtains. He would approach the first one, the outer one. Hachitzona hoisa perufa. The outer one was bent back and held back with a clasp of gold, min hadorom, to the south. So the opening was toward the right hand of the Kohen Gadol, because it was prufa, it was bent back toward the dorom, toward the left side. V'hapnimis, the inner curtain, min hatzafon, was prufa, was bent back toward from the north. So he was going to have to zigzag when he went through these two parochesim. Mahalech beinehen, he would walk between the curtains, ad shemegia litzofon, until he reached the northern opening. And there, where there was a northern opening, he would enter with the machta in his right hand and the kaf, the spoon, in his left hand, into the place where the parochus was bent back. For hoyo mahalech beinehem, he would walk between these two parochos, ad shemagia litzofon, until he reached the section where the inner parochus was bent back. Now, if he went through that opening, that perifa, that place where the inner curtain was bent back, he was now in the inner sanctum. He was now in the Kodesh Kodoshim. Hofech ponov ladorom. He would turn left, face the south. Leilech ad bein, in order to go between the poles, the extending poles of the Oron. And he would approach the Oron. Mahalech beneihem, achim hegi aletzofon, hegi aletzofon. Hofech ponov ladorom. He would turn left. Mahalech lismolo im haparoches. Walking south, facing south, with his left hand near the curtain, ad shehu magia la'oron, until he actually reached the oron. Now remember, the Mishnah is describing the procedure in the second temple. In the second temple, there was no oron, but he would go to where he knew the oron was, or would have been had there been an oron. The oron was lost between the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash. So he would go to the place where the oron would have been. He gia l'oron, when he reached that place, no seines hamachto bein shnei habadim. He would put the shovel full of coals, which was in his right hand, and put it between the two protruding poles of the oron, or in the second base hamikdash, he would put it in the place where there would have been two protruding poles from the oron had there been an oron. Now, he's only holding the spoon full of ketores. Sovar es haktores al gabe gecholim. The Gemara explains that what the Kohen had to do at this point with the spoonful of ketores was a very difficult trick. It was avoda kosha sheba mikdash, a very difficult trick, because what he had to do is pour the incense which was in this ladle or spoon into his own hand, so that it was in his own chofnayim. It was between his hand. It was back into his handful scoop to do that. And he couldn't drop any of the ketores to the floor. Every bit of ketores had to be dropped gently and slowly from the spoon into his hands. Then he would drop the ketores from his hands onto the hot coals. V'nismalo kol habayis kulo oshan, and the whole inner sanctum, the whole Kodesh HaKadoshim, would become full of the smoke of the incense, which was now sprinkled upon the fire. He did that, and he was through. Yotza, he left the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ubolo Bederech Beis Kenisaso. And he went through the way he came. He went through the Heichol, and there he stopped, and he uttered a prayer. Well, notice he did not pray in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. All he did in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was walk, place, I don't want to use the word dump, but drop the ketores from the spoon into his hands, and then from his hands into onto the hot coals and the shovel, and leave. Later on, he'll come back in and remove, as we will see, the kaf and the machta. But at this point, the spoon, the empty spoon, and the glowing coals upon which the ketores were poured remain in the Kodesh HaKodoshim. Remember that. He exits and utters a prayer. Tfila kutsora babayas achitz, on a very short prayer. V'lo hoyo ma'arich b'sfilaso, not a long prayer. Shelo lahavis es Yisrael, the Jewish people were waiting outside, anxious, would the Kohen die in the Kodesh HaKodoshim? Perhaps he did something wrong, or in this holy, awesome place he would die? No. Therefore, he didn't want to hold him in suspense. He came out, uttered a short prayer, and then, as we will see, presented himself to the audience, to the people. What was the nature of his prayer? It was as follows. He prayed, Yihirat Zom Milfonecha, may it be your will, Hashem Elokeinu, Lord our God, if this year should be a very hot year, tehei geshuma, may there be a lot of rain. V'lo yosur shevet mi beis Yehuda, may the rod, the scepter of kingdom, the royal rod, the royal, the symbol of royalty, should never leave the house of Judah. V'lo yihiyu amcha beis Yisrael srichim zelozeh, may the Jewish people not need each other. May everyone be have a parnosa on his own without having to ask for the charity of other people. Shlo yihi yuam chabes Yisrael tzrichim zela zela parnosa. Va'al tichoneis lifonecho tefilas ovrei drochem. May those people who are travelers and don't like rain, may their prayers for beautiful sunny days not be answered. When people come to Eretz Yisrael in November and December and are tourists, they pray for beautiful sunny days, but we need rain. So may though the prayers of the Ovrei Drochim not be heard, but rather hear the prayers of those who request rain. And so we have left the Kohen Gadol now in the Heichal, uttering a prayer. We've left the kaf and the machta, the empty incense spoon, and the shovel full of coal in the Kodesh HaKodoshim. We also have left a Kohen standing and stirring the blood of the par on the fourth rovat, the fourth row of stones in the Azora. And we'll, of course, go on to the next stage of the game in tomorrow's shiur. But for now, we have completed lesson number 17 and Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah of Perek Hei.